Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I've got a great lineup of guests today. Joanne Lesh and Dan Lesh will be joining us from over in Gustavus. They run the Gustavus Inn over there, and they're going to talk about how you can take a vacation in your own backyard. A couple of folks from the Juneau Amateur Radio Club will be here to talk to us about Field Day, which is coming up on the 23rd and 24th of June. We'll get a preview of the music and eats that are available as part of this new program that the Arts Council is running over at the Jack. It's called Food Truck Friday, and we'll also hear about music on the fly happening in the airport. All of that coming up on Juneau Afternoon on a day when the temperatures are balmy and warm and we're all wearing short sleeve shirts. And guess what? Later this week, it's supposed to go up into the 80s.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native corporations say they're feeling the impact of new rules for federal contracts. Previously, the corporations, Native American tribes, and Native Hawaiian organizations could enter into non-competitive federal contracts of any amount. KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports on the concerns raised at a meeting this week in Anchorage.
Under the Small Business Administration, or SBA 8A program, Alaska Native corporations were able to win contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars, contracts that added up to $4.4 billion in 2009. In 2010, Congress passed a law requiring procurement officers to develop written justification of SBA 8A sole source contracts totaling more than $20 million. Janice Hotch is a manager for the Alaska Native Regional Corporation, Sea Alaska. She says the new rules have had a chilling effect.
Contracting officers, because they don't want, you know, to be put under the spotlight by Congress, they're now just reluctant to issue sole source awards. They're just not wanting to do it.
A December 2012 Government Accounting Office report shows a 60% drop in Native corporation contract dollars since 2010. National 8A Association President Ron Perry says the new rules are also adding to overhead costs. In Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
In Argentina, indigenous rights activists are demanding a meeting with the president. They want to discuss territory claims and alleged human rights violations. Indigenous leaders from around the country held a summit last week. They wrote a joint letter to Argentina's president. After getting no response, activists launched the first of what they say will be weekly protests to ask the president to meet with them. Ailish O'Neill has more from Buenos Aires.
Hoy estuvimos presentes en Neuquén, Bariloche, Bahía Blanca, Caleta Olivia.
Indigenous rights activists gathered Wednesday afternoon in Buenos Aires and many other locations throughout Argentina to demand a meeting with President Cristina Kirchner. Felix Diaz, the leader of the Colm people of northern Argentina and the elected spokesperson for over 20 indigenous nations, says he wants to talk to the president about the indigenous people's right to land.
The problem all the indigenous peoples have is that it's unclear if we can continue living on our own land. Because of this uncertainty, we suffer from tuberculosis, we lack water, work, education.
Diaz says the president doesn't want to meet with indigenous leaders because she supports the national and multinational companies that want their land.
In the middle is the question of soy cultivation, livestock. It's the greed of private companies and the state itself that want to take possession of the land where, historically, we've lived.
President Kirchner has released no statement about the indigenous people's meeting request. Participants in Wednesday's march say they plan to continue holding weekly protests until she meets with indigenous leaders. For National Native News, I'm Alicia O'Neill in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley called for flags to fly at half-staff starting today to honor the passing of two Navajo code talkers. King Fowler and Milton Gishel passed away last week. The Navajo code talkers developed an encoded system used during World War II to transmit messages during battle. The program was highly successful and remained classified for decades after the war. In 2001, the Navajo code talkers were officially recognized with Congressional Medals of Honor. The Navajo Nation estimates that less than 60 code talkers are still alive.
Thank you.
During this month in 1992, President George Bush declared a year of reconciliation between American Indians and non-Indians. Congress also passed a law in 1992 declaring it the Year of the American Indian. In his proclamation, President Bush asked that the country honor America's indigenous peoples and learn about each tribe's unique history, customs, and traditions. This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO News. It's about 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guests are not actually here in the studio with me. They are in Gustavus, and I'm wondering what the weather is like out there in Gustavus today. Hello? Are you with me? Oh, dear. Sounds like maybe we've lost them, so a bit of music, and we'll sort that out in just a moment.
I move along at the speed of light. Got the rhythm now down in my bones, but I've been around so long it seems. I turn around, Lord, to face my home. You stood there, darling, always ready for the unknown. I want to, Lord, I got to. I'm gonna lay down my worries. Lay down my worries. Just to make things right. We don't mind living out of need. As long as you're there, girl, just to shine your light. Well, I'm gonna pray for all God's speed. Lord, you bring me comfort, likes of which I'll never know. And I want to, Lord, I got to. I'm gonna lay down my worries.
See if I can lay down my technological worries here and hopefully bring in. Nope, we still got a problem here. So, more music.
Oh, now, now, Lord, you bring me comfort, likes of which I've never known. And I want to, Lord, I got to. I'm gonna lay down my, oh, no, no, child. I'm gonna, oh, lay down my worries. Gonna lay down my worries, come on, child. Yeah, I'll lay down my, oh, baby, I'm gonna lay down my worries, come on, yeah. Oh, lay down my, oh, no, no, child, I'm gonna, oh, lay down my worries. Oh, gonna lay down my worries, come on, child.
Are you with me now?
Yeah.
Good.
Hi, this is
been
Joanne.
Been a kind of an interesting moment or two there trying to get the phones to work. So the topic of our conversation, as I understand it, is spending a part of a vacation, a local vacation in Gustavus for folks who are maybe not visiting the state but who are a resident here.
Oh, I think a lot of people don't realize that we have a national park out here.
I think that's probably true.
So we have all the attributes of a great national park.
We're not on the air yet. Hello?
Yeah.
So are we on the air right now?
Yes, we are. So I should tell you that my guests are Dan and Joanne Lesh, who operate the Gustavus Inn out at Glacier Bay.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
So we have all the attributes of a national park out here with guided walks, interpretive walks. We have the visitor center with exhibits and, you know, the lodge setting over in Bartlett Cove. And, you know, Gustavus is the gateway to Glacier Bay. So Gustavus Inn essentially has been here since 65. It's an old homestead that has been completely redone and hosts people who are visiting the national park.
Joanne, I'm sitting here looking at a photograph of the Gustavus Inn on your website, and it is a truly remarkable building. It sits out in the middle of a nice meadow with trees all around.
It's wonderful. You can grab a beer and sit out on the deck and see Icy Strait out in the distance. It's a big, open, grassy meadow that is rising an inch and a half a year from isostatic rebound. And so there's, like, lots of flat, open space. And you can sit on the deck and see the water shimmering out in the background and then watch people harvesting your dinner while you're having some smoked salmon and beer.
Hey, I'm ready.
Well, this is like perfect weather. This is like going on a vacation to any fine inn across the world. We have people visiting from all over the world here.
How does one get from Juneau to Gustavus easily?
There's three ways. The ferry, twice a week. It's kind of an odd schedule. You have to go online and check it out. But Saturdays, for sure, a round trip. And the jet every single night. It's Flight 71 from Seattle, lands in Juneau, and then comes right on out here and then back to Seattle every evening. And then, of course, the small planes by taxi.
Leaving from probably the float pond or out at Juneau International and then flying right over.
Yeah, we have a big, beautiful airport here, so we don't need float planes. It's all wheel planes.
So if one is at the Gustavus Inn and wants to explore the ocean around the area, do you have those arrangements also?
We pick up all of our guests and host them like they were our family. So all of our cars and staff were running around all day to the various tours and activities, fishing. But also we have a fleet of bikes. And we have a whole shed dedicated to bikes, and there's more than 20 bikes there. Everything from kid tag-alongs to trailers to, you know, women's and men's-sized bikes. And it's all flat, 10 minutes to the dock from here. You pretty much have the reign of the town just by bike. You can even ride your bike into the national park.
There was a lovely little addition to our local newspaper here that listed all kinds of festivals around the area. Are there some summer festivals left on this calendar for Gustavus?
Biggest one of the year, this is Dan, by the way, would be 4th of July. It's kind of our town's town pride day.
Mm-hmm.
We all come out and play, you know, games, egg tosses and greased pole competitions and parade and... So that would be the biggest attraction of the summer.
The small town 4th of July that all of us remember from childhood kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It is pretty special. And to answer your question, I guess maybe if you were asking if we do any of the on-the-water services ourselves, the answer would be no. But there's really good whale watching. Pointed Office and then, you know, second to Glacier Bay are some of the biggest attractions. And, of course, the fishing out here is quite good. I mean, Juneau's got... good fishing, but from here, a lot of times they'll go out to the outer coast.
If someone wanted to come out and spend the night, Dan, how far in advance would they need to reserve?
Oh, it depends. I mean, oftentimes we can accommodate them, you know, that night if they had a whim or the next day. But in early August right now, we're totally full. So,
I see a contact us on your webpage. How would people get a hold of you to make a reservation if they were interested?
You could call us. I have an 800 number, 800-649-5220. Or you could email us at dave@gustavson.com. Or you can go on our website, too, and find that.
We have lots of availability. That's actually why I wanted to be on the radio, because it's just beautiful out here, and I don't want everybody to miss the summer and let it go by.
Man, it is a spectacular summer, isn't it?
Yeah, fresh flowers from the garden on the table already, and we're starting to get our lettuce in, and we had, like, fresh pea greens and little bok choys and some microgreens. And Dan's been cooking for us this summer, and he's really been serving up some wonderful meals. We had salmon skin sushi the other night for our hors d'oeuvre before dinner, and it's kind of fun having several family members working and keeping our traditions going.
Well, it sounds like an absolutely delightful opportunity for Junoites, particularly since it's so close and so easy to get transportation out there. The telephone number, again, for making reservations is 800 what?
649-5220.
649-5220. Joanne and Dan, thank you. Sorry we had a little confusion there at the beginning, but I think we straightened it out, and I think we know much more about the Gustavus Inn than we did a few minutes ago. Thank you.
Oh, nice talking to you.
You bet. Bye now.
This is Bird Note. It's early June, and I've been away. I arrive home to find our alder trees completely stripped of leaves. Standing quietly, I hear what sounds like 100,000 mouths chewing. The walls of our house are covered with tent caterpillars. Now, it happens that one night late last July, we'd opened the windows. Within minutes, we heard this. Hundreds of small brown moths, Malacosoma californica, were bumping against the screens. We had no idea what lay ahead. Female tent caterpillar moths live only a few days. They lay their eggs on trunks and branches of deciduous trees, then cover the clusters with a frothy little mass that hardens like styrofoam. This allows the eggs to overwinter. In spring, the larvae emerge as caterpillars, spin a silk tent, and eat young leaves. After 8 weeks as caterpillars, they form cocoons. In another two, they become moths. The moths reproduce, and the cycle begins anew. Years ago, yellow-billed cuckoos were frequent visitors to the Pacific Northwest. Yellow-billed cuckoos, one of the few birds that eat tent caterpillars. It's a mystery why they no longer come. At least this year, it can't be for lack of food. Something else must be at play.
It's 19 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are a couple of guys that I'm pretty good friends with. It's coming up on an annual outdoor celebration of amateur radio on the 22nd and 23rd of June, and Dave Bruce and Larry Walter, a couple of hams from the community, are here. Larry is otherwise known as KL7IWC, and David is WL7BKA. How'd you get those designations behind your names?
The FCC gives them to you after you study, apply for a license, pass a test, and they issue you a call sign, which is yours for basically as long as you want it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So we're here to talk a little bit about Field Day. What is that, Larry?
Well, Field Day is an annual event sponsored by the Amateur Radio Relay League, where amateurs and amateur radio clubs go out in the field and operate their stations from generators and off the city grid, if you will.
So has this gone on for a long time?
It's I don't know when it started, but it's been an annual event as long as I've been an amateur radio operator. And it's It's a contest, and it's a twofold thing. One, it's a contest amongst the amateur radio operators for points, contacting one station to another. And the other thing is it tests the ability to operate under emergency conditions. So there's a fun part to it, and then there's a practical application.
So will this take place here in Juneau somewhere?
Yes, the city lets us use the Hagavig Fire Training Center for our exercise. They're real supportive of our keeping emergency communications capability. So they, each year, assuming they don't have any classes scheduled out there, allow us to set up and use the facility, which works out very well for us.
I think that's like across the street from where DMV is, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Okay.
We look at it, the DMV is across from where the fire training center is.
Yes, that's the other way to look at it. Anyway, so if someone wants to come out, is it permitted? Is there something to see? Is there something to do?
It's open to everybody. We encourage anyone that has the slightest interest in shortwave radio, amateur radio, to come on out. We have people there. We'll give you tours, explain what's going on. If somebody really wants to get on the air, we can help someone do that. Talk to somebody quite a ways away, and we'll have a picnic from 12 to 3, and that would be the best time to come.
Because
we'll give you a free hot dog or hamburger.
Okay. So when you do this and you're talking to somebody far away, what kinds of things do you say to them? What do you use the radio to communicate?
Hi, how are you? No, in the contest mode, we're looking for their location and their signal report. And we'll put that in the logbook, and then depending on where the station is, gives us the number of points we get for the contact. So that's what we're looking to do today. And we might, or at field day,
yeah.
And we might do it with voice, like we're talking right now, or continuous wave, Morse code, CW. And we may use teletype, radio teletype.
So hams still use code, Morse code.
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay.
It's still quite popular. It's getting more popular, surprisingly. I think it's about 10, 12 years ago, the FCC eliminated the requirement to test for Morse code in order to get an amateur license.
So you no longer have to do that to get the license?
No, you just have to take a written examination. But surprisingly, more and more people are actually learning Morse code, and it's a very active part of amateur radio.
Well, it sounds kind of old-timey in many ways. You've got code and radio teletype. I don't think anybody uses those very much at all in the world. Is ham radio kind of like old-fashioned?
No. It started out, you can still do the old-fashioned equipment if you want to, the old ways, but we have very modern equipment. In fact, as I understand it, amateur radio has made an awful lot of advances in radio communications. Guys playing around, experimenting, trying to do things. We started out that, I forget exactly what it was, but was amateur radio supposedly had all the frequencies above a certain point because nobody felt they were any good. Or of any use. And gradually they take them away from us as we find ways to make
As they're developed.
Yeah.
But, lots of amateur radio operators are in the communications industry and do quite a bit of experimenting with different types of operation, cutting-edge things.
Are there many hams in Juneau?
There's about 200 licensed hams in Juneau right now, of which 66 of them are a member of the Juneau Amateur Radio Club.
And the Juneau Amateur Radio Club, does it hold like regular meetings and like that?
Yes, we meet the first Wednesday of every month at the NOAA weather facility. They're kind enough to allow us to do that, and they've let us put up a station there, too. We're kind of a backup to them in case of an emergency. If their means of communications go down, then we'll try and communicate for them, say get information in and out. There's also every Wednesday at the Safeway Deli, we have a luncheon, And if anybody wants to come out, old hams, former hams, anybody that's interested in going on, becoming a ham, can stop by. It's a bunch of old guys sitting there solving the problems of the world.
So if someone wants to become a ham, how do you go about doing that?
Come to the luncheon.
come to our luncheon.
Okay.
And but the process to become a licensed ham is associate yourself with a club, because that's where people that are knowledgeable are. And clubs usually hold classes once, twice a year. The Juno Amateur Radio Club does it at least twice a year, spring mm-hmm. and spring and fall. And you take the class, and at the end of the class, an examination is administered. And if you pass it, you get your license.
Hmm. You mentioned setting up a station for this. Could you kind of describe what kind of equipment it takes to set up a ham radio station?
A ham radio station can be as sophisticated or as basic as you'd like. To participate in amateur activities in Juneau, you could have as little as a little handheld radio in the VHF band, or you could have a station with a very moderate HF high frequency radio for longer haul communications. But one of the things is what they call QRP mode, which is a very low power, modest antenna, maybe maximum of 10 watts of power, and try to work the world with that. And it's not very expensive. So you can go for a couple hundred dollars to
a lot more than that, I would imagine. Yeah, I should have been. But how long have you guys been part of the ham radio community?
I had my first license in January of 1958.
Hmm. And Larry?
I was first licensed in 1976 in Illinois, and I came up here about 2 months later and had to change my call, and it's been the same ever since. So I've had this radio call since 76.
So one more time, if people are interested in seeing ham radio in action, they can come out to this amateur radio field day event that is coming up, and it is what days again?
For, this coming Saturday and Sunday.
The 22nd and 23rd.
23rd of June, and again, it's at Hagavik Fire Training Center, which is... Well, DMV's across the street.
Correct. Right. Yes.
Okay. I think I got it right that time. Okay. Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for kind of filling us in on what's going on in the world of ham radio.
Well, thanks for talking to us,
Thanks
Pat.
For having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, June 14th, 2013. It's Flag Day. It was on June 14, 1777, that the Second Continental Congress approved the Stars and Stripes as the flag of the United States, with a star for each state and 13 red and white stripes to commemorate the original 13 colonies. Of course, in 1777, there were only 13 states, 13 stars, and their arrangement was not consistent. Sometimes the stars were in a circle, sometimes in rows, and on a few occasions the stars appeared in the shape of a star. Our current incarnation of the flag has been around since 1960, with Hawaii's admission to the Union, and in the event that Puerto Rico is officially made a state, there are already some 51 star designs in the works. It's the birthday of Ernesto Che Guevara. As a young man, he took off a year from college, traveled around South America by motorcycle with a friend, and recorded his adventures in a journal, later became his book, The Motorcycle Diaries. He was disturbed by all the poverty and oppression he saw there among the Indian people of Latin America, and he came to believe that the only solution was violent revolution. So after graduating from medical school in 1953, he met the Castro brothers, Raul and Fidel, in Mexico, and joined them in their plan to overthrow the Batista dictatorship in Cuba. Their forces landed in Cuba in November 1956 and were almost wiped out by Batista's army. The survivors fled to the mountains, formed a guerrilla army, which eventually overthrew Batista and established a Marxist government. As Castro's right-hand man,
Che Guevara held several top government posts. He visited New York to speak at the United Nations as the head of the Cuban delegation. He appeared on Face the Nation and traveled all over the world. He was ill-suited, though, for diplomatic work, his nature being confrontational and uncompromising. Later, in Bolivia, while leading a guerrilla army against the Bolivian regulars, a glimmer of his medical calling remained. He treated and released enemy soldiers, but eventually he was captured and executed. And here's a poem by John Ciardi, Bees and Morning Glories. Morning glories, pale as a mist drying, fade from the heat of the day, but already hunchback bees in pirate pants and with peg-leg hooks have found and are boarding them. This could do for the sack of an imaginary fleet. The raiders loot the galleons even as they one by one vanish and leave still real only what has been snatched out of the spell. I've never seen bees more purposeful, except when the hive is threatened. They know the good of it must be grabbed and hauled before the whole feast wisps off. They swarm in light and fast dive in, then drone out slow, their pantaloons heavy with gold and sunlight. The line of them, like thin smoke, wafts over the hedge. And back again to find the fleet gone. Well, they got this day's good of it. Off they cruise to what stays open longer. Nothing green gives honey, and by now you'd have to look twice to see more than green where all those white sails trembled when the world was misty and open and the prize was there to be taken. A poem by John Ciardi, Bees and Morning Glories, from the collected poems of John Ciardi, published by the University of Arkansas Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
The next TED viewing party is 6 p.m. Wednesday, June 19th at the Downtown Library. Our theme is communication. Video presenters are researcher Amy Cuddy on how your body language shapes your mind, the humorous Harvard professor Michael Sandel on the lost art of democratic debate, and the late legendary film critic Roger Ebert on the remaking of his voice after it was lost to cancer. That's TED Wednesday, June 19th at 6 p.m. at the Downtown Library, with pizza provided by the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries.
It's 27 minutes before 4 o'clock.
Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Going down. Nobody right, everybody wrong. Young people speaking their minds, getting so much resistance far behind. You know it stopped. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep. You know, into your life it's gonna creep. Well, it starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. Time we stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hell, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Hey, live music is always, it has a different thing to it, doesn't it? Isn't that amazing?
I love it.
The guy was Rod Crist, and he's sitting right here in the studio taking a sip of water right now. Great, great choice of song. One of my favorites, as a matter of fact. I like it very much. Kari Graven is here, and we're going to talk about a new program that's going down at the airport, right?
Yes. We've actually had this happen twice already. This is Music on the Fly, which is a brand new music series in Juneau, and it's at the Juneau International Airport every Sunday, 6:30 till 7:30 p.m. And it's very much for the travelers and the people coming through, and it's kind of a peak hour at the airport with two planes leaving and two planes arriving. But it's also for anyone in town that want to swing by and enjoy some music at the airport. So,
where are you all setting up in the airport? Where?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's down by the luggage. I think so. I saw my son was up visiting, and my.
So you're going to be on the conveyor belt?
Yeah,
going
we're this morning at the airport, dropping off my brother-in-law and son, and I saw the poster and had our name there, and it's pretty cool. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So it's you and who? Darren Jensen.
Darren Jensen is slide guitar and guitar player, and singer, songwriter for the band. Austin Osterholt, who's our percussionist, drummer, and violin fiddle player, and he also sings.
Oh, okay.
And then myself.
And you could just do an hour gig while the tourists walk past you and wonder what the heck is going on here.
Well, yeah,
right?
It's going to be nice. It's going to be all acoustic, so we're kind of excited
about
that.
Cool.
He'll be playing
djembe
and singing and playing violin.
All right. I hope they can hear it up in the line that they have to stand in to go into TSA line.
I was there last Sunday, and the Thunder Mountain Big Band was playing kind of in the area where you have your back to the luggage area, and there's the exit door, and then right to the left of there, there's a spot. And there's actually an opening between the ground floor and the top floor right there, so the music carries straight up the wall and up in the area where people actually come out from the airport. And over by the bar, you can also hear it.
Hey.
So it's and people, it was so fun to be there last week. People were kind of looking around with puzzled faces, and then looking at where does the sound come from, and then they see the big band being there, and they get these big grins, and they pull out their iPhones and cameras, start videotaping, and it's also an opportunity to put out the suitcase. No, what's it called? The hat. People can support the musicians that way as well.
So you stick an open case out there and kind of,
I guess we'll
kind
do
of
a
let people
busting.
Drop a bucket. Yeah, there you go.
There
you go.
There isn't an ordinance.
So you didn't know there was money in this.
I've never been in music for the money.
No.
But no, I didn't.
Anyone who does is going to go hungry a lot.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so how did this program get started up?
You know, I'm not entirely sure of its origins. I know
it
that
sounds
this
almost like
happened.
They planned the airport to be able to support this kind of thing.
But we're doing this in collaboration with the Juneau International Airport.
Yeah.
Chris Truitt and Catherine Fritz, they are our big collaborators over there. They've been great helping us set this up and working on how this should be and the layout of the whole thing. And I know that, I don't know if it's a new thing, but it seems like more and more in airports around the country,
yeah,
there is music happening now.
Yeah, in Portland, there's a when you walk through TSA and all that sort of stuff, on the other side there in the middle of that food court, they've got a little stage right there where there have been musicians for several years. And the same thing, I was wandering down one of the concourses at SeaTac one night, and there was a harpist playing out in the middle of the concourse. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know how I got through TSA, but...
Exactly.
Let me look at the harp, sir.
At least I don't have to go through TSA.
Yeah. We have to look at all the strings on that harp, sir. Anyway. So how did you get the gig?
Actually, like, we were rehearsing up at Peabody's, and Austin was there, and he was online checking a song, an old traditional song, Red-Haired Boy. I was showing him the fiddle part, and he said, hey, there's this, you know, yeah, the airport music. And he got online. There was some open slots, and he signed up, I think, online, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So who's maintaining the sign-up list, you know?
Right now, I am.
Oh, okay.
And...
How you doing? Do you need groups?
Actually, we're almost fully signed up for the summer. There's one half-hour slot on August 18th.
So say somebody wanted to grab that half-hour slot, how would they do it?
They would either just call the Arts Council, 586-2787, or they can go on our website
and sign up like these guys did.
Yeah, and there's a link right on the front.
Okay.
And they'll go in and they'll see which slots are open and which are taken. But we're planning to do this all year long.
Oh. Well, there's airplanes coming and going all year
exactly.
long.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if it will happen every Sunday like it will during the summer, but it will definitely be during the holiday seasons, and possibly every Sunday. We'll see. We'll see how it goes this summer.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is a new element to the cultural scene in Juneau. You know, music at the airport is like, yeah, that's right.
I travel to the Caribbean. If I go to Jamaica, I know they always have a band playing when you come off the plane.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
kind of sets the tone of the town, you
yeah.
know, the city, and it gets you in the mood. So
yeah.
I think it's wonderful.
Hey, you got time for maybe another little cut here?
Sure, I'll do just a little something we're working on.
Okay, terrific. Just before you do, let's just make sure everybody knows, Sal. This is Sunday, 6:30 to 7:30. Did I get the time?
Yes.
Yeah, 6:30 to 7:30 at the airport. So if you're traveling, then, you know, join right in. But if you're just wandering around and you're looking for some good music, then drop by the airport.
Exactly.
Which is a strange thing to be saying. You know, go to the airport for some good music. I like it.
Last
hey.
Week, we have two dancers that joined up, that turned up last week and danced fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Swing dance to the Thunderman Big Band. So, yeah, we'll see what happens this Sunday.
Yeah, sounds like an event. Play some music for
All
us.
All right.
Here. Thank you, Rod.
Tomorrow and start to tremble and shake. The children of the sun begin to wake.
Christ and Darren Jensen and the band will be out at the airport 6:30 to 7:30 on Sunday night. Thank you so much for dropping by and bringing your instrument and doing a little
Thank
live
you
music on the radio
me.
For us. Thank you, Kari, for setting all this up and for arranging for music in the airport.
Thank you.
like 10 minutes before 4 o'clock, and our last set of guests today have got a little tale to tell us. There's this new thing going on at the Jack right now that they started up last week was the first one, I think?
Yeah.
And it's called Food Truck Friday. And in the studio with me are the folks who are going to be doing that. Nate's Grill is going to be the food. And the music is going to be, let's see, who all's on the music? Cray Van Kirk and Carl Reese, right?
Yeah, and then Greg and Mary from Full Circle Music.
Okay. So this is kind of the replacement for last year. They were doing like farmers markets, but this is a kind of a different approach sort of thing. So what's Nate's doing for this event?
Well, this afternoon we're doing tacos. It's shredded chicken taco with some Monterey Jack cheese and iceberg lettuce, as well as a chipotle ground beef taco.
Okay, what time you start serving? I'll be right over.
Well, as soon as we're done here, heading right over, get warmed up.
Firing up the grill right
then.
Okay. And there's a charge for the food, right?
Yeah,
you're not giving it away. Yeah.
No.
Okay. So were you involved with it last week?
No, actually, I was over at Relay for Life.
I was kind of wondering what the turnout was. Did a lot of people show up? Does anybody know?
I've heard there was about 600 people or so.
Hey, that's what I heard, too. So, yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, so I hope you're ready for this.
That'd be great. I'd love it.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
So I've got a guitar with you. Are you going to give us a little taste of what we're going to be hearing later?
Sure.
Let's swing that mic over for your voice, and let's get a little live music on this.
Adapt this.
There we go. We're building a recording studio even as we speak.
Even as we speak.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I think that works. Give it a shot. That's going to work, I think.
It's the nature of the beast.
There you go. We're playing with microphones.
We're playing with mics.
Okay.
It's like Legos, only different.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Well, we'll just do a couple verses of this.
Wandering traveler, and my journeys they are long, and I read the stories of this life in music and in song. And sometimes out upon the road, and sometimes in the sky, I look before what I will find to see if I can try to find the footsteps of the one who's maybe gone before, or maybe follows now behind in wisdom and in lore. And someday maybe we will meet upon a sunny day, strangers with familiar brands walking in the way. Hey lady, won't you walk with me down along the river to a wine dark sea? Between the cradle and my grave are years that won't be saved. So lady, won't you walk with me? Now some will dance on wings of gold, and others take a fall. Some get by on feet of clay, and some don't dance at all. The turning of the spinning ones, the circle of the moon, all wind the seasons round again and play a piper's tune. And upwards from the sea they come, answering the call, life upon its final run, beginning of us all. Hey lady, won't you walk with me down along the river to a cold dark sea? Between the cradle and my grave are years that won't be saved. So lady, won't you walk with me? This life in music and in song. And here I have come to sing for you of what has gone before, or maybe follows now behind in wisdom and in lore. And so now for the time we have, think upon the day when as strangers with familiar brands we'll meet along the way. Hey lady, won't you walk with me to a cold, dark sea? Between the cradle and my grave are years that won't be saved. So lady, won't you walk with me?
Oh, I love live music on the radio, don't you?
It's fun.
Hey, swing that microphone over so we can all talk here. We're a three mic studio doing a four mic gig here. It's kind of a little engineering feat. Anyway, so Cray, what are you two guys playing together or is
oh,
this
no
Carl's a solo gig. You're a solo gig.
He carries gig? Himself well.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
There's actually three people playing.
Yeah, and then
the Full Circle's playing as well.
Yeah, Full Circle. Oh,
and there's other people making food, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's
a big deal tonight with lots of people doing a lot of things. It should be good.
Right. So I guess the question is, how did this idea come about? Does anybody know who dreamed this thing up?
I think it's because the city got rid of the gazebo. They did have concerts in the park for years.
Yeah.
And they tried concerts. They did concerts in the park, and they had concerts out at UAS. And you and I were the...
We
played the very first one out there. Four of us out there.
Yeah.
And then they did them over in Douglas, and none of them have really caught on except for concerts in the park under the gazebo. And I think, don't quote me on this, that when the city took that shelter down, the Juneau Arts and Council was really trying to come up with more community things to do, and they've really been persistent at trying to develop a real community feel for all of the people who do things like this here, and it's really cool. And this is their latest innovation.
Oh, it's a great fun one. I got to say
I
that.
I think so.
Yeah, bring the family down.
People showed up.
It should be really good with the weather and everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good thing to and. Yeah, that was. They used to have and concerts in the park used to sometimes have to get moved into places like because you know the weather isn't always like today.
Too bad.
I played a concert in the assembly chambers once, and that was a little weird, but not bad.
Yeah. Did you open your case so the chamber members could toss a buck or two?
Yeah,
take the bribe. Yeah.
Let them pay for the music a little bit there.
Well, there were Hawaiian dancers that day, too. That was kind of, you know, they were dancing with glaciers in the back, because there's a big glacier scene in the background.
Yeah. An ideal background for Hawaiian dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it was good, but I think this is an improvement over that, especially without having that gazebo.
So the times on this thing today are I know you got to fire the grill up right after the program, but when do they open the doors for
the music starts at 5:30, and I know a lot of folks are already set up outside, so that's already going on. But I don't know when they open the actual doors to the Jack itself. But the music sets are at 5:30 to 7:00.
5:30 to 7:00. Okay, yeah. So, real chance to drop by here. The groups again. You two guys are playing Cray Van Kirk and Carl Reese. Who you said there was a third musician?
Full circle.
Yeah, that's Greg and Mary.
Greg and Mary. So, yeah. And that's the music tonight. Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're going to pipe it outside. The music will be inside on the stage, but they're going to pipe it outside. I don't know what the speaker setup is, but it'll be.
Set up around.
Yeah.
Okay. And then how many other outfits are down there besides Nate's Grill? Do you know?
I believe I saw about two or three others that were setting up.
Okay. Yeah. So you got lots of chances for food, kind of wander around and figure out what you want
that.
Hey, great way to listen to music and eat dinner and do part of the Juneau scene. Hey, listen, I've got about a minute and a half to get out of here, and I got some stuff to read. Could you give me a little pick in there to talk over the top of?
Okay, what are you reading?
These are announcements and what's going to be on the thing, and I have to do a station ID.
Do a station ID.
So I need technical music.
You need technical music.
Hey, thank you guys for being on the show today. So as my musician plays the background there for me, I'll thank these folks for coming in and telling us about this deal. And I'll tell you that this is KTOO Juneau you're in tune with. We're broadcasting at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on 2K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1, and K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An excursion in at Nicey Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. Just one quick note here. CBA Engineering would like to remind users of the Marine Parking Garage that starting tomorrow, they're going to be moving the one-hour free library use parking up to level D, and that'll be June 15th through October 1st this year. So ground level spaces A through V will become public pay mark parking, and if you're going to visit the library, go up to level D. And that's just about all the time we have. Pat Moore, I've been your host today for Juno Afternoon. Thank you very much for joining me for all of these wonderful guests, and I'll